Welcome to Current Situation, your weekly political pulse. I'm your host, Joshua Gale, alongside South Carolina State House Representative Jordan Pace. Every week, our goal is to help you navigate the complex world of politics through biblically conservative perspectives. Before we jump into today's conversation, we want to take a moment to thank our sponsor.
Hey, I'm Matt Frost, founder of Charleston Engagement Rings, a private jeweler based in Charleston, South Carolina. I help couples all over the country find the perfect engagement rings, lab-grown diamonds, and other fine jewelry. Unlike chain stores, I'm not tied to only certain manufacturers who have big markups. We save people 30 to 50% on average because we don't have the overhead cost of having a storefront or owning the inventory. To save you time, I have all my diamonds overnighted. Those diamonds can be placed in a setting in as little as 3 days. And if we can't find the perfect engagement ring, I will work with you to create a custom ring for a fraction of the price in as little as 7 to 10 days instead of 4 to 8 weeks for most jewelry stores. If this sounds like how you want your jewelry experience to be, reach out to us today through social media or by phone at 843-951-9250.
In today's episode, South Carolina State Representative Jordan Pace is joined by special guest Mark Heath. The two discuss the rising insurance costs in South Carolina and the role of government regulation in curbing these increases.
Mark, thanks for being with us today.
Honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about what your background is and your expertise on insurance here in the Palmetto State.
Sure. So a Berkeley County boy, born and raised, and other than a short stint living overseas and college, basically lived in Berkeley County, somewhere in the Charleston area, my entire life. And I've been in some role in the financial services industry for about a dozen years now, specifically in property and casualty insurance, going on 5 years now, and about 4 years of owning my own insurance agency. And my expertise over the years in the insurance world actually started prior to being in the property casualty industry when I was doing other forms of insurance or other things in the financial services industry. I came across and was able to work with insurance carriers, helping manage their financial assets. And so that kind of piqued my interest about the whole business of insurance and risk management. And so mostly what I do now is commercial insurance, be it property or liability, sometimes referred to as casualty, which is where we get the liability portion of property and liability insurance. And so I've got customers who range from mom and pops to multi-million dollar corporations throughout the country. And that gives me a very interesting and I think unique perspective on all the ins and outs, especially of liability and the risks that come with being in business.
Yeah. Well, here in South Carolina, we've had a lot of conversations, especially the last few years, regarding insurance rates, insurance carriers, a lot of myths, a lot of things that have been truly a problem, but also a lot of propaganda put out kind of by both sides of the argument. Most recently, we had organizations pop up, I think last year, called SC Venue Crisis, essentially a lot of restaurants, bars that had seen a massive increase to their liability insurance, like their liquor liability insurance in particular, but insurance broadly. Some of them jump in like tens of thousands of dollars from one year to another. There was one restaurant in Charleston that went from paying $7,700 in 2017 to $58,000 a year in 2022. What can you help us parse out? Like, what are, one, is this actually happening? And then two, what are the underlying reasons for this? Like, what's actually true? Is it because of our what's called tort problems? You know, who can sue who and who can sue for what? Like, what's really going on with this?
Sure. Yes. So the first answer to the first question, yes, it is happening. Mm-hmm. The rates are increasing for insurance, generally speaking, both for property. Anybody who's a homeowner who's listening or watching, or a property owner, they know that those insurance rates have gone up, but also for business owners, anybody who's doing any sort of activity, whether it be a side gig or side hustle, you are likely to have some form of liability insurance, general liability, or if you're renting some space, you know, commercially, then you're probably going to have general liability insurance. And so to get started in explaining why, I want to just give a really 30-second flyover of how premiums are determined.
Yeah.
And this has stuck with me ever since I first studied for the life insurance producer license exam in 2012. There are 100 men who are aged 36 in Charleston, South Carolina. They're 5'7", 180 pounds. They fit into this similar category. If there are 100 of them, we know based on, as an example, actuarial tables that one of them, let's say one of them is going to die every single year. Essentially, what that does is it allows the insurance company to say, okay, we know that there's a 1% chance of somebody just like Mark or Jordan dying in Charleston, South Carolina. And so if you or I won $100 worth of life insurance coverage, and the insurance company has to do two things. Number one, they have to charge as much as they can to all of the people in that class in order to make a profit. Otherwise, they're going to be shut down by the Department of Insurance, which we'll talk about later.
Is that a legal requirement?
They have to have enough in order to make a profit. If an insurance company is not profitable, then it can't operate, just like any business.
Right.
Even not-for-profit insurance companies still have to make what's called an underwriting profit. So they have to do two things. One, they have to charge enough premium to make some sort of an underwriting profit. And number two, they have to be able to pay out a claim, which essentially comes from making sure that the product is profitable. So Let's say I won $100 of a life insurance this year. What does the insurance company then do? They then charge $100 to the other 99 guys just like me in order to make sure that both of those things happen. One, that they're profitable, and two, that if there's a claim, they can pay out. So that means that if I want to buy $100 worth of life insurance this year, it's going to cost me $1.01, $100 divided by 99. So everybody in that class gets to pay $1.01. So as that ratio goes up and down in terms of, you know, how many people in this class are going to file a claim, that will influence the rate. So take, for example, liquor liability in South Carolina. If there's a 1% chance that a bar or a restaurant is going to have a liquor liability claim in Charleston, then you can basically come up with the rate that it's going to be for you to pay for every $100 of coverage. If that percentage goes up, then guess what? The rate goes up. If that percentage goes down, then guess what? The rate goes down.
Right.
Which is why in states where everybody is a horrible driver and they have a lot of accidents, auto rates are very high.
No, that makes sense. There's more claims and there's more payouts.
If there's a higher chance that the insurance company is going to pay out on a claim, then there will be a corresponding higher premium. It's just simple math and economics. The insurance companies have to be able to be profitable that way.
Yep.
Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to make claim payments.
Right. So just broadly, in any economic, any goods or service, the things that bring down prices is the number one thing is usually competition. So
correct.
Something that's been floating around for the last couple of years is that we on the property and casualty end and on the liability end, the insurance companies are leaving South Carolina. Is that true? And if it is true, then why?
Leaving is a strong word. That would imply that they're doing it willfully. In the state of South Carolina, just for personal property insurance, mostly homeowners. In the last 2 years, I think we've had 12 or 13 or 14 homeowners insurance companies be ordered liquidated by the state because they were financially insolvent.
Okay.
Yes. You may have heard of Southern Fidelity. You may have heard of Lighthouse. Those are two that were basically charging such low rates and they were selling so much homeowners insurance that they were, it was unsustainable financially. Mm-hmm. And so the Department of Insurance monitors all kinds of data. And so eventually, I think it was 22 is when Lighthouse was ordered liquidated, because basically the DOI says, you're not going to be able to sustain this. And so they shut down the company. And so that's happened a number, that's got to be a record in the last 24 months that 12 or 13 or 14 companies have been ordered liquidated. Yeah. Now, at the same time, we've had new insurance companies come into South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Overall, I would say that we're probably about flat.
Okay.
The number of insurance companies that have either left willfully or been shut down compared to the number of new companies and new markets, we might sometimes say, we're probably about flat, if not a little bit on the negative in terms of growth. So,
okay.
And that's broadly speaking, some sectors, you know, of commercial property or liquor liability or personal auto, it's a little bit different because not every insurance company is going to insure every type of what we call a risk. So not everybody's going to sell homeowners. Not everybody's going to do liquor liability. Not everybody's going to do general liability.
Yeah. That's specialized.
Yeah. So we've had some that have either left or were shut down. But overall, we have pretty much the same number of options in South Carolina. What's probably been the tightest squeeze, if you will, is the guidelines and the restrictions. So to use an example, in order to get homeowners insurance, let's say, you have to fit into a box where you have to have 10 of these 12 things checked off for, you know, ABC Insurance Company or Nationwide in order for them to insure you. And it used to be that way. Now they've expanded that from 10 of 12 to you got to have 20 out of 25 things.
Wow. So the checklist got doubled.
Yes. So the requirements have gotten larger. And the leeway that an underwriter might have had before to say, okay, well, this home is technically, you know, 4.99 miles from the coast, we can say that there's a rounding error and it's 5.1 miles from the coast, which would maybe check off one of those boxes.
Yeah.
But that flexibility has also gone away. They're getting more, you know, stricter and tighter in their underwriting guidelines. And so that has been another major cause of the rise in rates, because simply put, if I don't have 20 options and now I've only got 5 for my product, those 5 may not necessarily want the business. Those 5 companies might not want to insure me, but if they're going to do it and they have to maintain profitability, they have to maintain the ability to pay out claims, then they're going to charge me in order to make both of those two things happen.
Yeah.
Inflation has probably hit insurance harder than most industries, I would say. I have seen companies in the last 18 months that have never issued what's called a class-wide rate increase. So let's say, you know, everybody who's a landscaper, mm-hmm. every landscape company in South Carolina gets charged a base rate of $10 for every $100 of payroll or revenue that they have. I've seen companies who have said, everybody in that class, we're raising your rates 25%. I've seen that happen 2 or 3 times in the last 12 to 18 months on companies that have never done that.
Wow.
And that's aside from a small, like 2 to 3% every 2 years, something adjusting for inflation. But they're saying that because of inflation, and you can see it. I got hit in an accident about 15 months ago, mm-hmm. and parts, labor, rental car, all of those things have gone up. And that meant that the other driver's insurance company had to pay more for all of those things to repair my vehicle. The parts, there was a part shortage. So my vehicle was in the shop for 30 days waiting for a part, which meant the other insurance company had to pay for another 30 days for me to have a rental car.
Right.
That's how inflation hits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. So mm-hmm. As inflation goes up, that's caused insurance rates to go up because they're paying out more. You deal with mostly commercial enterprises. When their costs go up, we see they raise prices. So whether the landscaper that used to charge $20 a yard is now having to charge $30 a yard simply yep. based on his costs of insurance and maybe labor. Is that, I forgot the term, a doom spiral is something I've heard that called, of insurance rates go up. So these guys, you know, that are paying the insurance have to raise their prices, which further pumps up inflation, which makes the insurance rates go up. Like, where does the cycle end? Because it seems like it's like a self-perpetuating.
Sure, it is machine. A self-perpetuating. And I mean, Adam Smith talks about this in his discussion in The Rise and Fall of the yeah. Wealth of Nations, right? You'll have periods, and sometimes they're extended periods, of inflationary activity where it just takes a little bit longer. And typically it's when the market is larger than other markets. So if there are, 100 actors in the insurance market in South Carolina, mm-hmm. it's going to take them a longer time for all of those things, all of those kinks to be worked out than if it were only 10, right?
Yeah.
And especially as, the gig economy or the shared economy continues to grow, and it does, and the numbers prove that, economic data proves that more and more people are doing side hustles and things of that nature, and more people are starting their own businesses today because of that, which is great. As there are more people involved, it may take a little bit longer for all of those things to work out. But eventually, yes, so markets will correct themselves. Eventually, there's a point at which, a consumer is not willing to pay a certain price in order to insure their business. And so they're either going to go uninsured or right. they're self-insured, or they're not going to go through, start that business. I've got a customer in Savannah, Georgia, who is building some condos, and the plan is for in about 12 to 18 months for them to break ground. They had an idea and an estimate of what their insurance costs would be. Mm-hmm. And it was drastically lower than what I've informed them. And to the point where they are deciding, do we do this project because the cost of their business loan is also going to be a little bit higher than they thought? And so they're having to decide, okay, how much are we willing to risk here and make the investment for in order to make this happen? And there's a price point, just like for any product, there's a mm-hmm. price at which consumers will not pay for internet or TV, or there's a price at which people will stop buying milk, as we've seen in the last year, as milk and dairy prices soared. And I can tell you, and even in my own home, there was a price when we decided we're not going to buy as much of that.
Right. Well, it's every decision that we make. But it's interesting that you bring that up about like how insurance affects even housing, like affordable housing costs. Like why aren't builders building more affordable houses? Well, if they're going to have the same costs to build a $300,000 house versus a $500,000 house, they're going to build the $500,000 house every time because it's going to make them more money. So that's an interesting way to kind of put that in perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Last two topics, what can government do on the state level? Like what's something I could bring back to my colleagues in the state house on how can we mitigate? Obviously we can't solve inflation. That's more of a federal thing with the Fed and printing dollars and federal spending. What can the state do maybe on the regulatory side to help slow the drastic increase in these costs?
Sure. So I think in my opinion, if there is one verse in the entire 66 books of the Bible that is an argument for or a justification for, the laissez-faire libertarian point of view, it's 1 Timothy 2. What does Paul say? Pray for your government that you might have a quiet and peaceful life.
That's good. Yeah.
Right. So the first thing is that I take that to mean, it's just to answer your question, the less that you do that requires anything of me, the better, because mm-hmm. I want to live a quiet and peaceful life. And so, I won't hide the fact that I am very libertarian leaning. And so the less government involvement in my life and in my business, the better. And statistics prove that as well. Economics, the history of economics shows that. So the answer is typically not more regulation. no matter what the problem is.
So, for example, the list that you mentioned, like the went from 12 to more than 20 of requirements mm-hmm. and things like that. That's one of the main drivers of costs going up for on the insurance side.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That's one of the main drivers. Yes. So they've tightened the restrictions and their underwriting guidelines. Yes.
So, and this is probably something we can talk about more in the future, but joint and severable mm-hmm. liability has become a big issue. It's being talked about in the Senate, especially. I think they actually had hearings on it this week. I can give a little brief overview of that, but basically it's where if you're involved in a lawsuit, it's like if somebody got in a car wreck at a gas station and the person at fault in the car wreck didn't have a whole lot of insurance, then the person who got hurt in the car wreck could sue not only the person who caused the wreck, but the gas station that the wreck happened on their property just for being on their property.
Right.
Right now, the state law says if you're at least 1% liable in the judgment, then 100% of the judgment can be collected from you. So even if the gas station was only 1% liable in that situation from the court, they can wind up paying tens of millions of dollars. And when I say they, their insurance company is who winds up paying.
Well, it's important to understand that the insurance company may be the ones that pay out, but contractually and legally, it is the owner who is, right. you know, the judgment is awarded against. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. So how do those things affect? That's been the law in South Carolina for more than 15 years. We've seen some incidents, some big high profile things with the Murdochs. How has that been affecting insurance rates?
So it's important to distinguish, I think, that joint and several liability is a common law principle that essentially it allows for a standard to either be modified or not be modified or simply be wide open. And so joint and several liability is not necessarily a bad thing. We have a modified version of that in most industries in South Carolina, right? And so it sort of the domino effect, if you think about that. The first person to cause the first domino to fall that ends up hitting several other dominoes and causes an injury.
Yep.
Generally speaking, a jury is going to go back and say, if you wouldn't have pushed that first domino, none of this would have happened, right? And so that's the case in most liability. Liquor liability, however, is very different. And liquor liability, joint and several liability, is, you know, the situation there is what you just described. If my bar is found 1% liable, it is entirely possible that my share of the pros of the settlement or the judgment, even if there are 10 others, and let's say the mm-hmm. judgment amount is, you know, is $100,000, if I've got 1% liability participation in an injury, I could still potentially pay $10,000, or I could still potentially be liable for $100,000, right? Mm-hmm. And so basically what I'm trying to say is, in my opinion, we need to get rid of that, the joint and several liability specifically for liquor liability, because to the common man, most disinterested or everyday folks probably would think, yeah, that kind of makes sense, that if I was a proximate cause to an injury, you know, it just so happened that my car was rear-ended by somebody else and then I ended up rear-ending somebody else, right? I wasn't the main cause, so mm-hmm. I shouldn't be held liable to the same extent that the person behind me was held liable.
Right.
And so that kind of makes sense, that we should really allow judges and juries to decide, you have the majority of liability here, which means that you're going to be on the hook for the majority of the payout.
Right.
And the way that liquor liability, joint and several liability doesn't works right now is that there is no divvying up. There is no common way of divvying up that liability. Basically, if you participate and you are found to be guilty to any extent, then you can be held liable for everything.
Okay.
So that's a big thing. Yes, getting rid of that specific modified joint and several liability for liquor liability.
So on the insurance end, basically that creates a big, scary mystery to the insurance actuary, like the guys determining how much the payouts are going to be, because they don't know how much the payouts are going to be because it could be 10,000 or it could be 10 million. There's just no way to know. So I guess that's what primarily is playing up the concern on their end.
Right. And so it's important that to understand this too. That won't necessarily change. So even if we're able to successfully modify joint and several liability in South Carolina regarding liquor liability, that won't necessarily change how insurance companies insure it, but it will change how the claims payouts happen. And right. So overall, again, going back to that, you know, an example of 100 people in Charleston who one out of 100 might die every year. Mm-hmm. If there's a $1 million lawsuit and I'm insured for $1 million and so are 10 other bars and restaurants, if it looks like I'm going to have to pay out $1 million, then my insurance company is going to put that $1 million claim into reserve. But if I'm only going to have to be liable for, let's say, 50,000, then my insurance company is going to only put 50,000. That's what drives the claim rate and the right. loss ratios, essentially, or those underwriting profits for insurance companies. And so the more equitable, if you will, and specific the liability can be, the better, because eventually, and it won't happen immediately, but eventually, the insurance companies that operate in South Carolina that offer liquor liability will be able to say that, okay, our aggregate or average loss was $250,000 last year. We've instituted this change, and if that average loss drops by another $100,000, then that has an effect on rates.
Right. Okay. No, that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. So as kind of close things up, we try to put everything from biblical perspective here on the current situation. Is there a biblical basis for carrying insurance, either personal, business, you name it? Like, do we find that somewhere in the Bible to start with?
Sure. So yes and no. Insurance is not a word that I've ever found in scripture, right, whether the Hebrew or the Greek. But the idea behind insurance is all throughout scripture. So most people don't realize this, but an insurance policy, legally and technically speaking, is actually a contract. It's a legal contract between two parties. So if I'm the policyholder and let's say Nationwide is my insurance company, my policy is a contract in which I agree to pay a small amount of money, a premium, and in return, in addition to, you know, keeping my property up to code and all of these other things, in return for all of those things that I give, Nationwide will pay out $1 million for my property or for liability, whatever it may be. So it's a contract where two parties agree to do several things. Mm-hmm. And we see contracts all throughout the Bible.
Yeah.
We see the enforcement of those contracts, most especially in the Old Testament. And there's a lot of the Old Testament law, the Mosaic law, that is basically about enforcing contracts. I mean, that's what a lot of the very first parts of the Mosaic law in Deuteronomy, especially in late Exodus, we see basically here, if you do this to your neighbor and under these circumstances, here are the ramifications. And so at one point, Moses receives great counsel from his father-in-law. And then he's like, Moses, dude, you're like trying to handle all of these disputes all by yourself. You need to appoint some leaders, appoint some people to help you out. And so as a result of that, he appoints some leaders and then appoints some judges. And that's basically what the role of judges was to help settle disputes between individuals. And so the Bible does speak about contracts. And I think it's pretty clear as a follower of Jesus that God wants us to honor our contracts. When we say that we bind ourselves to doing something, that we're going to follow through and do it. And that's essentially what Jesus is saying in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, let your yes be yes and your no be no.
Right.
He's not telling you don't take an oath, per se. Really what he's trying to say is oaths really don't matter if you don't keep your word.
Right.
So if you don't have any integrity, then it doesn't really matter whether or not you pledge an oath to something.
Right.
If you're not truthful, which is why he says, here's the deal. When you say yes, make sure it's a yes. And when you say no, make sure you mean that it's a no. And so God really wants us, I think, to honor our contracts. But secondly, in addition to that, our faith is based on, and we have this understanding of a covenant between us and God. And there have been several other, you know, previous versions of the covenants throughout Scripture that we see. It's important to understand covenants are not contracts and contracts are not covenants, but they're very similar, right? And God does not say, I am going to establish my contract with you, Abraham. He says, my covenant with you. And that's important. Very similar in how they're shaped. Each, there are multiple parties, typically two parties. They agree to do X, Y, and Z, and there may be ramifications if they don't do X, Y, and Z. But here's the main difference between a contract and a covenant. In a contract, there are stipulations that if I break the contract, and in common law, we come to this conclusion. If I break my end of the deal, then the other person is free of their obligation to uphold their end of the deal.
The hook.
So if you and I have an agreement where I'm going to pay you rent to rent your space, if I don't pay you rent, then I've broken the contract and you can kick me out. That's sort of a precursor and a basis for how a covenant works. The only difference is that in a covenant, there's no way of letting the other one out.
Thankfully,
God doesn't kick us out or for breach of covenant. He always upholds his end, even if we don't. And even if we cry foul, even if we make things really, really bad, which we're good at doing, God still honors covenant, which is why Jesus is saying, let your yes be yes and your no be no. I and the Father are one, right? God honors his covenant. And when he says that he will do something, he will do it. When he says that he will not do something, when he says that he will never forsake us, he means never. And so, in my opinion, if I can't honor a contract, I think that says something about my faith. If I can't commit to honoring a contract, then I question my ability to honor a covenant and to honor God in his blessing me. And so I take that seriously. I think that that contracts are sort of a precursor or a basis of understanding and fulfilling God's covenant with his people.
And insurance, so in the society that we live in, the implication is like if somebody gets hurt on your property, like there's or you make a mistake and cost someone else money, like there's an implied responsibility there. And many people may not have like the cash on hand to meet those responsibilities should they come up. What insurance does, if I understand it from a layman's perspective, is helps you keep those societal contracts and be able to let your yes be yes and your no be no.
Absolutely.
If you have that
absolutely. That's a great point. It makes it not necessarily easier, but it gives some guarantees that yes. I mean, companies that offer a guarantee or a warranty on their product, they insure it. So you buy any part for a motorcycle, vehicle, whatever, right? That part might have a 10-year guarantee or 10-year warranty. And if it breaks, their word is that they will replace it. But if they financially can't, or under the circumstances, it makes sense for them to file a claim with their insurance company. The insurance company is essentially backing that company's word.
And like you were talking about Deuteronomy, I think it's Deuteronomy 22:8, it gives a very specific characteristic of liability. It says if when you build a house, you have to have a railing around your balcony, which back in those days before air conditioning, the balcony or the roof of your house was like the cool place to sleep at night, or it wasn't quite as hot. But if somebody doesn't have that, then they're liable for anyone who's injured from falling off the roof. So kind of sets up this biblical idea of liability.
Yes.
If you don't have safeguards in place, the way I look at it financially is the insurance, having insurance, whether it's home insurance or business insurance, what have you, is having those guardrails in place, not necessarily protect you, but protect your neighbor and the people around you.
Absolutely, yeah. There's even a point Paul says in 1 Timothy, I think it's chapter 5, who basically says, if you don't provide for your relatives, especially mm-hmm. your family, like your immediate family in your household, I think is the term he uses.
Yep. Yep.
You've denied the faith and you're worse than an unbeliever.
Right.
If that's not motivation to get life insurance, I don't know what is.
Yeah. Well, Mark, I appreciate you coming on and sharing some wisdom with us about what's going on with the insurance world. It's a hot topic on the state and on a personal level with folks on just making their family budgets for the year. And as we talked about it in Columbia, hopefully we can come back on and we can talk a little bit more, maybe more in depth about some other subjects kind of in this orbit.
Sure.
But thanks again for being with us. And thanks everyone for listening. If you enjoy this podcast, please give us a 5-star rating and subscribe. And whatever platform you are, whether iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube. And we'll be back next week with the current situation.